himself. As it eludes her, she kills. You're right. And the persimmon guy's a good comparison, because I'm not going to be surprised if Mira concludes that doing the equivalent of jumping in the Seine becomes the endgame here, whether Strongbow knows it now or not. I'll live forever, immortalized by my words and deeds. The question is, how many will she manage to take with her before she jumps? 11. Eve sent the communications and a detailed report to Mira. She sent an update to Peabody, and since between the two of them, only Peabody actually knew how to sew, instructed her partner to push that angle. Because Jenkinson and Reinecke had an investment, she copied them. She widened the search on the Strongbow name, but found no connection in Delaware. Rising, she walked to the board. She's got no real connection to anyone up here. It's all illusion. She's put them all into her story, one where she's the writer, the main character, the victorious villain. She makes herself into the killer in the individual books, the sex, the weapon, the method, the crime scene, close as she can get. Kent and Rylan, they're surrogates, and as close to the fictional victims as she could manage, and it's damn close in both cases. But Delano blends into this Deanne Dark, and that's delusion. Delano's nothing like this character, not in looks, lifestyle, personality, or experience. The antagonist must have a protagonist, Rourke pointed out. In this case, she's flipped them. Right from the traditional roles. That's where she's living. She's got to move to the next book. Hell, she's got the next six picked out and ready. Look at the timeline of the communications. She used those lags to start her research, to select and study and plan. That way she can move from book to book. A month between the first two. Stepping back, she took a hard look at both victims. Some of that's recovery time. First kill's big. Time to settle down again, to wait and see if you made any mistakes. And part of it's just opportunity. She wanted the vid to mirror the one in the book as closely as possible. It's on the schedule, so she just had to wait until the scene's set. But the next? Eve rubbed her hands over her face. Could be tonight, could be 6 months from tonight. If it's the 6 months, she'll move on someone else or rush it, because she's in it now and the need escalates. Who's the third? Moving to it, Eve rolled the stiffness out of her shoulders. Ex-girlfriend of a trash rocker. Edgy lifestyle, mid-twenties. Lots of illegals and easy sex. Poisoned in a club. High-end sex club, pretending to be a dance club. Cyanide in some fancy martini. And the killer? Obsessed fan of the rocker. Female. Same age group. Rumor is the Vic and the rocker may be getting back together. Rocker's out of rehab, clean, and obsessed fan kills his ex to protect him from her. I need to read it, she muttered as she came back to her desk. But I really need to find the victim before she is one. How many badass ex-girlfriends of trash rockers are going to be living in New York? Maybe don't narrow it to trash rock. Successful rockers, any subset thereof, to start. All the killings are in New York. Killer lives in New York. So it has to be... Christ. More than you thought? Rourke asked when her search results came up. Her eyes wanted to bleed. I can narrow it, she mumbled. I will narrow it. But she felt obliged to skim through first. Double Christ. Nadine's on here. Nadine? Rourke stopped his work. Our Nadine? Wait, wait. There are a couple articles on gossip sites. Blah, blah, Jesus. Photos, too. Stuff about her having dinner or going to a concert with Jake Kincaid. That's that guy in that band. I know who he is, and Avenue A as well. Strong, innovative rock musicians. Strong and innovative enough, they've stayed at the top of their game over 2 decades. And Nadine's seeing him? Yeah, she is, according to this stuff. He was performing, like Mavis, at Madison Square the night of the massacre. He was backstage, hanging with Nadine when I got back there. He called her Lois. Lois? It only took a moment. Ah, as in Lane. Clever.
And if you're worried, I wouldn't be.
Kincaid has a reputation for being a hard-working musician, and one with a reasonably clean lifestyle. Nadine doesn't fit the victim here. No, they don't fit the characters, and Nadine's not going to hang out in a sex club. Well, the down and dirty, but that's different. She never mentioned she was banging a rocker. And dinner, a concert, equal banging? They're grown-ups. Unattached grown-ups. Banging ensues. Anyway, she narrowed her search parameters. Younger, toss in the rehab. She looked at the note she'd written earlier. Victim made her living charging for interviews, taking kickbacks from clubs, selling data to gossip reporters and blogs, and brokering illegals. Consumed same. Bit by bit, Eve fed it in until she got down to a half dozen potentials. Better. I can work with that. I'm through this, Rourke told her. Do you want me to take some of those? No. I'm gonna run them on auto for now. I need the books. This one and the sudden dark one. Hell, I need them all. 2 library visits in one evening. Why, it could become a habit. He went with her. I'll take one, you the other, he suggested as they walked through the house. You take the, what is it, dark deeds with the rocker. I skimmed the murder scene, but you may catch something I missed. I want to see what the hell there was in sudden dark that snapped this woman. Get a better sense of it before I talk to Delano again. And her mother, Eve said. The mother's probably got a better sense of the communications. She stepped into the library, unsurprised to find it ordered. Dishes cleared, wine glasses whisked away, books they'd been reading neatly stacked on the bench table. Because he knew her, Rourke headed to the cabinet first. Coffee time's passed at this point. I believe I'll have a brandy. Knowing her opinion on brandy, he brought her water. She considered arguing, then considered if she won said argument, doubtful, she'd probably be awake until it was time to get up again. She took the water, pulled sudden dark off the shelf. Once again, she sat beside Rourke with a book, with the fire simmering. The only thing missing was the cat, and she imagined they'd find Galahad sprawled over the bed when they got there. She didn't have to hunt up the first murder, as the book opened with it, from the killer's point of view. Male, a sexual predator who abducted women, first victim, age 24, kept her for 3 days, raping, torturing, and eventually drowning her in a bathtub. After which he applied makeup to her face, styled her hair, and dressed her in a business suit. He added pearl studs to her earlobes, kissed her tenderly, and called her Brittina. Then, in the early hours of the morning, he transported the body to a location in Little Italy and dumped it on the sidewalk in front of a restaurant called Lucia's. She skimmed through to the first dark scene, then skimmed until she found the killer again. his thoughts as he stalked and captured his next victim. She set the book aside, got up to prowl and pace.
"I think you summed up the victim here in Dark Deeds well enough," Rourke told her. "I'd add it may apply that the only reason Dark took the case was because the victim's mother, a friend of a friend's mother, came to Dark and pleaded with her. The victim's painted as careless, selfish, even a bit vicious, but the mother never gave up on her."
"So see if there's one on my list of rocker girlfriends who has a mother who hasn't given up. It could apply." Rourke set his book aside. "You're frustrated because you find yourself investigating on two fronts, fiction and reality. Fiction is reality to this bitch." "It is. And for you, fiction is an occasional form of entertainment, and for you again, primarily through vids. A book's a different thing."
"Made-up stuff is made-up stuff."
Rourke shook his head. "A vid comes to you, even at you. It's visual, it's auditory, and can, of course, pull you in. Its purpose is to do just that, draw you into the world you see and hear. But a book? You go into it. There's no visual or auditory other than what forms in your own mind. You visualize the characters, the scene, through the words. You, as reader, interpret the tone of voice, the colors, the movement as you physically turn the pages. Now you have a killer not just experiencing the story, not just replicating it, but living it. So you have to do the same, and that's frustrating for a woman as reality-based as you."
"And more," he added. "With each killing, she becomes a different character with a different motive, a different psyche.
But under it, she's just one sick, twisted, and you know what? Whiny bitch. Whoever she puts on," Eve waved her hands around her face, "she's still under it." Then she sighed. "And the sick and twisted is, I don't need Mira to tell me this one is likely to end up in a facility for the sick and twisted instead of an off-planet cage when I find her."
"Yet another frustration."
"It's how it is. Still, a part of you will think, however damaged she is, she still took the lives of the people on your board. She still shattered the lives of those who loved them."
"I'll worry about that later. Worry about catching her now."
She paced a little more and circled a finger in the air. "This," she said, indicating the books surrounding them. "They're different kinds of fantasy, you could say. And she's zeroed in, reader and writer, on murder fantasies, crime fantasies. That's what, like you said, pulled her in. And enough for her to spend time writing to Delano. Enough for her to spring off another fantasy of being a writer of that kind of fiction. Why read murder mystery type books?"
"Entertainment," he began, but Eve cut him off.
"No, you. You're the reader here. Why do you read them?"
"Ah, well," swirling brandy, he thought it over. "I enjoy a puzzle, I suppose, and playing along with it. Certainly since I married a cop, I get more entertainment and satisfaction at experiencing the villain's ultimate failure. Good overcomes evil in the end, and that makes them a kind of morality play."
"Okay, but that's not what she's after. She wants to flip that. She wants evil to overcome good. She wrote a book she claims makes the killer, the villain, the star, right?
And claims that that's what makes it innovative and brilliant," Rourke added, "when it's certainly been done before."
"She's self-absorbed. Nobody's done what she's done, not in her mind. In this sudden dark one,
Delano writes stuff from the bad guy's perspective, so you see him plotting and thinking and doing stuff, but just bits and pieces, right? It's not his book. It's Deanne Dark's book. But Strongbow's rewriting it, all of them, and making herself the star. She's in charge. What if... It's the only way she can be, Rourke finished. The only time she's ever been in charge. Bang. It's not, for her, the puzzle, the entertainment, even the temporary escape from reality. It's the only way she's in charge, that she's important. The only way she wins. What does that tell you about her? It tells me the probability's high that whatever job she has, or did in Delaware, is low rung. Likely she's been overlooked, and, at least to her mind, undervalued. And, I think, she's had little interaction with males. I'm betting female-centric profession. Maybe comes from a female-centric background. Female authority figure or figures, because she sure latched on to female-centric books. Yet she wrote her protagonist as a male, Rourke pointed out, who kills women. That may stem, edging into Mira territory, because she's never had any real power as a woman. Could play in. Most likely she lives alone. No real connections to pull her into the real world. Possible, always possible, she's got a big shit pile of money, but most likely she's living on a budget, and since a roommate or partner is unlikely, I'd look for her in a small, cheap apartment. And likely in Brooklyn. Likely she works there, too. Maybe has a job where she can work out of her own place. I like that one. Limited contact with actual people, that's how I see her. She's ordinary, Eve added. She's not particularly attractive, because attractive people tend to make connections if they want them. And she does. She wants people to see her. They just don't. So no sparkling personality. No charm. She doesn't stand out. Never been popular. Never been somebody. She's kind of invisible. And that enables her to become whoever she wants to become. A.E. Strongbow was her chance to be someone. To become visible and important, and Delano stole it. Killing Delano isn't enough. Before it comes to that, Rourke said, she has to steal Delano's work, flip the theme of the morality play, and rewrite it with herself as the center. That's the circle, Eve agreed, and around it are plenty of angles to work. Okay, okay. She had them lined up in order of priority in her head, and now she looked at Rourke. Well, strip it off, pal, and let's get this done. His eyebrows winged up as she hit the release on her weapon harness. That's quite the pivot. Somerset free house, library not yet checked off. It's a straight line, not a pivot. After laying her weapon on the bench table, she pulled off a boot. That's a good couch. She tossed the boot aside, pulled off the other. It'll work. I don't believe I had that purpose in mind when I bought it. Then again, that was before you. I'm here now. She pulled off her belt. You too. I am, yes. And currently watching my wife strip in the most practical and efficient way, and wondering just why that only makes her more alluring. Alluring, right. She stripped off her sweater and shirt to the tank beneath. And he timed it well, he thought, waiting until her trousers dropped to her ankles. Before she could fully step out, he grabbed her, quick and sharp as a whip, so she tumbled on top of him. You're still dressed, she pointed out. Not for long. and rolled her under him. Since she seemed in the mood for heat and speed, and he felt the same, he took her mouth, ravished it with his. Her hips pumped up, circled in grinding invitation, even as her hands wedged between them to make quick work of the buttons of his shirt. He dragged her tank down to her waist, so flesh pressed to flesh. 2 more minutes, we'd have been naked. Her voice came breathless, her teeth nipped. But this way works. While her mouth warred with his, she unhooked his trousers, freed him. He rolled her panties down to her knees. When he thrust into her, she rose up to meet him, to take him. Yeah, yeah. Her fingers dug into his hips. Her breath went ragged. This works. He let himself go. It was what she wanted, what he needed, so he took. Found himself taken. Pistoning hips, muffled gasps, hot bodies, hot minds merging into one frantic unit. Mating, he would think later, when capable of thought again, at its most elemental. No frills, no sweet words, no seductions needed here and now. Not for two people who knew love spread under and over and through all. To be needed always struck her as elemental. To be needed by him, almost miraculous to the basic. So she, too, let herself go. To take and be taken hard and fast until pleasure, already keen, sharpened blade bright. In those last seconds, on that thin, edgy point of release, her eyes met the wild blue of his. She said, as that blade slashed them both, "I love you." Elemental. Later in the night, curled up against him in bed, Eve dreamed strange dreams. She walked through the pages of a book until the words blurred under her feet and became the cheap, scarred floor of the flop where Rosie Kent died. She saw two bodies, two beds, two white sashes tied into bows, as if, she realized, on facing pages of a book. Rosie Kent on one side, just as she'd been in the crime scene photos from the file. Prior Carradine on the other, as described in the book. Close, she thought. Not exact, not like twins or clones, but close. "That one's mine." Eve glanced over. She'd read the description of Deanne Dark enough times now to recognize her. The dark hair, drawn back in a short tail to leave the face unframed. A pretty face, deceptively soft, as the woman inside it, behind it, knew how to be hard. "I know which is which." Even as she spoke, the pages turned. Now she stood in the theater, a body slumped in a seat on either side of the aisle. "No, of the page," Eve corrected. Again they were close, but not exact. "I know which is which here, too, but they're the same to her." "Him," Dark corrected. "That's the fiction. They're the same." "We're not." "I'm not in the books." Still, Eve crossed over to examine the fictional body as she would any victim. Strongbow had to change some things around, so it worked for her. She'd call it rewriting, but really, it's just cheating. She straightened, gestured. This one came in alone, because the friend got the bogus tag before showtime. But the real murder? Strongbow had to wait until both the Vic and her friend were in place. Because a real person doesn't have to follow the book, right? Ryland could have decided to skip it if a roommate got the emergency tag before the vid started. "That's not how it was," Dark insisted. "It's not how it was because the killer changed it. Benson came in alone because it's how Delano wrote it. Ryland came in with a friend because the killer couldn't risk her changing her mind. She wrote it different, just different enough. Eve turned back. Benson has to do what's written. No choice. Same for you.
I'm not in the books, Eve said again.
How does the killer account for that?
You don't exist, Dark told her. You're not real until you're on the page.
Eve smiled, cool and thin. That's exactly right. She awoke to the morning's reality. Rourke sat on the couch in the sitting area, drinking coffee, the morning stock reports scrolling on the muted screen, the cat sprawled beside him. She stayed in the warmth of the big, fancy bed another moment, studying the man who'd banged her like a drum the night before. The business suit radiated the elegant power of the man wearing it, and she had no doubt he'd already wielded that power in the pre-dawn hours. The cat showed a man content in his home, and the coffee? Well, a man who understood priorities. She sat up, said, "I'm not in the books," and rolled out of bed.
"You're not, no. And good morning to you as well.
Coffee. Shower. Think." After programming coffee, hot, black, she stumbled off to the shower with it. Rourke reached down, scratched Galahad between the ears.
"Another cold one for those of us who have to venture out of the house today. What do you say we get a bit of oatmeal in our favorite cup and help it go down easier with a ham and cheese omelet?"
When Eve came out, the cat was sprawled in front of the fire, no doubt where he'd been banished, as two domed plates sat on the table, along with a pot of coffee. She hit the coffee first. Priorities. And sat.
"I'm not in the books."
"So you said."
"How does she deal with that?"
"I don't know anything about writing a book, but it seems to me it's got to be a problem to add an entire character to the mix, right? And not just one," she continued as Rourke removed the domes. "There's you, there's Peabody. You've got McNabb, and for this at least, Reinecke and Jenkinson. Mira, Morris. It's a frigging cast of characters." As she spoke, she added brown sugar, berries, to the small bowl of oatmeal. Her mind definitely elsewhere, Rourke noted, as the look that clearly said, "crap, oatmeal," didn't appear.
"Your subconscious must have been busy in the night."
"Maybe, but I'm right, aren't I? She can replicate, with some creative fiddling, the murders, but she can't replicate the investigation. She can't rewrite me or the investigative team because we're not in the books."
"She's delusional, Eve."
"Yeah, but that could work for us."
"I bet she follows the crime beat. If she didn't before, she's following it now. And I happen to know the reigning queen of the crime beat and just how much she loves an exclusive."
"Which you'd give her. I put it out there that we've connected these two murders, and we're looking for a single individual, one suspect. Then I spin the whole following leads, unable to divulge. I can play that out."
"Writing yourself into the book?"
"No, no, just the opposite. I'm outside it. I'm the reality, but now I'm a face, a voice. Visual and auditory, right? And she has to figure out what to do about it."
"You'll try to shift her focus to you."
Her back went up instantly. "If you don't think I can handle some whiny wannabe, I don't doubt you can. But I'd hardly be as I'm written, would I, if I didn't have some concerns."
"Okay. And anyway, it's not about shifting her focus to me. Going after me? That's a whole new book, and she's got to finish what she's already lined up. It's about shaking things up, giving her something to worry about in the real world. It's a slap on her writing on one level. She wasn't good enough to convince me two different people committed two murders. It's a bad review, Rourke added, finding the angle inspired. And quite a bit brilliant. Wear black. You're telling me to wear black? Suggesting, he corrected. And, though I enjoy you in strong colors, you'll be projecting that visual. Dangerous black, uncompromising. In fact, I have something in mind. When it came to projecting an image, she thought, who had a better handle? Have at it, she invited. Rourke rubbed a hand on her leg, rose, then wandered off into her closet. As he did, the cat began a slow, silky bellying toward the table. Eve forked up a bite of omelet. Do you really think, because he went in there, I'd let you get away with it? Galahad blinked at her, rolled over, and went back to his sprawl in front of the fire. Rourke came back in with a mock turtleneck, body-hugging pants in a combination of leather and some sort of stretchy material, and a leather jacket with dull silver zippers on slash pockets on the sleeves. He'd added a pair of chunky boots that would hit well above the ankle and had that same dull silver in buckles over a series of tough-looking straps, all in dangerous black. With a nod, Eve polished off her eggs. I'm good with that. She rose to dress as he sat again, noting he'd brought her underwear, too. Black. Not just the man who had everything, she thought as she started to dress, but the man who thought of everything. I'm going to work here for an hour, Eve told him. Get that list of potential third victims hashed out. I want to talk to Delano again, and her mother, and I'd rather do that in my house this time. And Nadine. I need to see if Mira's on board with my assessment. Or ours, she corrected, as you've had a lot of insight on this. I wouldn't wish for another murder, he said, as she crossed over to hitch on her weapon harness. But I did enjoy the time with you in the library. All of it. I'm pretty fond of that room now myself. She shrugged into her jacket. Dangerous? Very. Add lip dye and mascara. Her back didn't go up this time, but her body sagged. Come on. Consider it insight. Just add that for the visual. Crap. Bullshit crap. She mumbled it, but strode off to the bathroom to push through the limited supplies Trina forced on her. She came out. Now? Lethal. You'll worry her, darling Eve. I have no doubt. See that you, at some point, slip a hand into your pocket in a way that shows the camera a hint of your weapon. That's good. That's a good one. I'm gonna get started. He rose, walked to her, skimmed a finger down the dent in her chin. Take care of my lethal cup. Count on it. She kissed him, walked out. I do, he murmured, slipping a hand into his own pocket to rub his fingers over the button he carried there. I do count on it. 12. In her home office, Eve read the list of names from her search list. Potential third victims, and some, she thought, hit close to the fictional character's careless, reckless, selfish description. More than a few of them had a sheet. Assaults, illegals, destruction of property, shoplifting, DUI, disorderly conduct, public nudity. Some charges dismissed. Some community service,
some cage time, and a lot of court-ordered rehab. As far as she could discern, not one of them contributed in any way to society. And not one of them deserved to end up on her board as a victim. She sent them to Peabody with instructions to set up interviews and to twist arms where necessary to get said individuals into Central. As she'd likely be talking to people most of the day, she didn't want to start now. She sent Nadine a text telling her to come into Central with a camera. She sent a message to Blaine Delano requesting that she and her mother come into Central at their convenience, advising them to contact Peabody with the time they expected to arrive. After one more message, this one to Mira asking for another consult, she sat back a moment to review her notes, then her board. Shake things up, she thought again. Change the angles and give the crazy bitch something to think about. She looked forward to giving Strongbow a dose of the real. She headed downstairs, saw her coat, a scarf, not the one she'd unwound the night before, but a long black cloud, along with black gloves, probably lined with some ridiculously expensive fur, and her oddly beloved snowflake cap. She lifted the memo cube topping the pile, engaged. After a brief, sort of jazzy instrumental, voices, male and female, sang in harmony. Baby, it's cold outside. She snickered, wondering how he managed to think of the silly. After gearing up, she slipped the memo cube into the pocket of her coat. She walked into the cold outside. Something fell from the sky that wasn't quite snow, wasn't quite ice, but took elements from both to create the altogether nasty. The thin skin of it over the streets boosted traffic from annoying to insane. She cursed it. Cursing it didn't make anyone move faster or with more skill or sense, but she felt better after venting. By the time she pulled into the garage at Central, she wished the entire driving population of New York City into the fiery flames of hell. She made her way up to Homicide, and as she swung in, noted Santiago sat at his desk. He wore a cowboy hat and a sulky expression. She said, "You're wearing the hat." "I know, boss. It's on my head." "Why are you wearing the hat?" He shifted to aim his sulky look at his partner. Detective Carmichael smiled her most serene smile. "A little bet," she said, "on the Knicks game. Chicago wins, I spring for lunch for a week. Knicks win? He wears the hat for a week." "You bet against the Knicks? You deserve the hat. I grew up in Chicago," Santiago protested. "That's gotta count." "The people of New York pay your freight, Santiago. That's what counts." The sulk deepened. "Don't you own the Celtics?" "Rourke owns the Celtics," she created. "And when they play the Knicks, they're the enemy. We have standards in this division. Mets, Knicks, Giants, Rollers, Rangers. Get on board, detective, or you may wear that hat permanently." "What about the Yankees, the Jets?" Eve stared coldly. "Don't make me write you up." She turned to Peabody as her partner clicked off her link. "Got some of it lined up," Peabody told her. "My office." Eve walked straight to it, dumped the outdoor gear as Peabody followed. "The Delanos are coming in as soon as the girls leave for school. On the skank list." "It's heavy in skank, Dallas," she said when Eve aimed a fresh stare. "On that, I'm mostly getting machines. Your average skank's not an early riser. I did tag one who hadn't been to bed yet. She told me to fuck off.
But since she's currently on parole, jumped another skank in a club, attempted to shove second skank off the balcony. Both were intoxicated at the time, also stoned. And as one Loxy Flash, legal name change from Mariana Belisky, is on parole and in court-ordered rehab, which ingesting illegals and or alcohol would break, and since she appeared to be under the influence of both, my suggestion that she come in or have her parole officer advised of this violation was met with a fuck you, I'll be there. Peabody's rundown gave Eve a fairly clear picture. However, I think we'll refrain from referring to potential targets of a murderer as skanks. Let's see what you say after you deal with her and the others once I run them down. I predict a skank parade. Anyway, I read your report. This Strongbow looks like a viable suspect. Obsessed? Peabody ticked them off a list with her finger. Pissed off? Threatening? Irrational? Now we have to find her. I didn't find a single Strongbow in Delaware after casting the net over the last 5 years. And the ones I found in New York don't fit. It's her nom de plume. It's her nom de bullshit, but we need to keep pushing on it. There's probably some sort of connection. Going with the odds again, she's in Brooklyn, low-rent digs, low-level job. We can start running females who relocated to Brooklyn around the date Strongbow wrote Delano she'd taken the risk. So, May 58. Females living alone, no spouse, no cohab. No criminal, Eve considered. She never took a risk before. Stayed in the background. We can flag any seamstresses, tailors, though that might just be a hobby. You really think she made that coat? If she did, that takes real talent. I've exhausted the search, and that sort of reversible wouldn't be hard to pin down if it's retail. You're gonna run that down. You've got to get the material, right? Whether she made it or had it made? If we continue with the living on a budget line, having it made is less likely. If she made it, that dopey penguin material came from somewhere. Let's find out where. I've got some sources there that might be able to help. If she's a serious craftsman, she wouldn't order material online. You want to see it, feel it. And I'd guess she'd need a professional machine. Tap the sources. Will do. I want to study the security feed again, get a good zoom of the material. I bet my eyes would be sharper if I had coffee. Eve just jerked a thumb at the AC. If you tap out with local sources, try Delaware. Maybe she brought it with her, the material. If she's that good, she must have had specific venues for buying her supplies. If she actually made it, she might be in the business. If she's in the business, she probably gets her supplies wholesale. Frowning, Eve took the coffee Peabody handed her. That's a point. If you wash out with your suppliers, tag Leonardo. He's a high-end designer, Peabody pointed out. Did he design those pants you're wearing because they're abso-mag? If I had yard-long legs toned like steel, I could wear those pants. I don't know who the hell made them, and Leonardo wasn't always high-end. He'd still know people. And her oldest friend, Mavis's honey bear, had the sort of sweet, open nature that drew people. Get on it, stay on it. Pull in help if you need it, but let's track those stupid penguins. I'll take the Delanos when they get here. Already booked A. Dallas, we could pass the run on Strongbow, hunt for single female in Brooklyn, to EDD. They'd cut through it faster. Do that. And,
She trailed off when she heard footsteps coming their way. Female. Hell, all she had today was female. Mira, looking very female in her soft blue winter coat, some sort of fuzzy white beret angled over her dark sweep of hair, stepped to the doorway.
I'm interrupting.
No, your timing's great.
I'll get on this. I love the hat, Peabody said to Mira with a grin, getting one in return. It's a new favorite. You do such pretty work, Delia.
It's not work if you love it. Peabody clomped out. Mira swept in. The thin, short heels on the rose-colored booties made no concession to whatever fell out of the sky. But they matched the pretty suit under the coat to an exact shade. Mira set down her suitcase-size handbag, shades of blue and rose in a wavy pattern, unwound her white scarf. You want some coffee? Or that tea stuff?
The tea, thanks. I had coffee this morning.
Though Eve couldn't say what having had coffee had to do with having coffee, she programmed the tea. I appreciate you getting to me so fast.
I read your reports last night and this morning.
Mira sat in the desk chair after Eve pulled it out for her, crossed her legs.
I wanted to get to you before my day started, as it's very full. From the data and evidence you've gathered, Strongbow is the prime suspect. This person, and I agree with your conclusion, she's a woman, exhibits signs of obsession and delusion.
And then some, Eve agreed.
She's clearly obsessed with Delano, with the books, with her own desire to publish. She's moved from fan to fanatic. The accusations, her absolute conviction that Delano plagiarized her work, is part of the delusion. And that delusion and obsession has its roots in her conviction that Delano was not just the author of a series of books she enjoyed, but her personal friend, her mentor, her advisor.
She saw what she wanted, needed to see, and made that her reality.
Yes. There is nothing, absolutely nothing in Delano's responses, though they are warm and friendly, even helpful, to warrant these conclusions. This is a woman who creates situations, imagines actions, reactions, connections, and turns them, as you said, into her reality. She wishes something was so, and it becomes so. She has no one to talk to, no one to ground her to reality. She lives in the books. One she reads, one she writes.
Mira sipped some tea while Eve edged a hip onto the desk. She kills in the books, and now in reality.
Taking her power. I'd say she's felt powerless, Mira continued. She's watched those who break the rules, who do what society considers wrong, profit and thrive. Likely she's experienced being treated unfairly, though she, at least in her mind, did her very best, though she followed those rules.
Bad guys win.
They often do in reality, Mira agreed. Reading a series like Hightower, or like Dark, there's a comfort. Terrible things happen, and they happen often to good people, to the innocent. But evil is overcome and punished by good. Balance is restored. At some point, this wasn't enough. If those who do evil win, why not write about that? Why not show that, and eventually, why not be that?
You agree she's living in the books as she's writing them.
Her improved version of them, yes, exactly. The version where she, as creator and the dark protagonist, has the power. The longer she does, the harder it will be for her to come back to reality. the shorter the time she'll be able to hold that reality. If, as you believe and I agree, she's already selected the third victim from Dark Deeds, she is living as the character of the killer in the book. Whatever job she might have, whatever other tasks she needs to perform, they're becoming the illusion. Eventually, the illusion she creates will become too strong and far too appealing. Without medication and treatment, reality will cease to exist.
You're saying she's not legally sane. But she plans, she edits, she's choosing to kill to become the killer.
I don't want to diagnose without examining her, but it's the killer choosing. A part of her writes, whether literally or in her head. The writing is so consuming, the betrayal by Delano as she sees it, so abhorrent, she becomes the character, but her more finely crafted version. One who punishes, who seeks to harm, seeks to win by any means, who, in her version, defeats Dark, thereby vanquishes Delano.
And right now, she's some jealous, vengeful skank, plotting to kill the woman she feels is ruining the man she wants, the man she needs.
She has to troll the clubs, Eve continued. She has to spend some time living the life to inhabit that character. She'll kill again. She'll sure try.
If she gets in deep enough, wouldn't she get stuck? Wouldn't she stick inside the same character?
It's a series, and Dark is her adversary each time. She follows Dark. I think she needs the books, the stories, the continuation, and, oddly, the thrill of becoming someone else, someone new.
Mira set her teacup aside, rose.
This is a clever woman, one who thinks everything through, step by step. But that thinking is limited to the story she lives in. I think a large part of her life has been lived that way, and the world outside's thin and inconvenient to her. She'll do whatever she needs to do to stay inside the story where she's strong and triumphant, and out of the world where she fades into the ordinary.
She'll like my world, where she ends up in a high-security facility for violent mental defectives, even less. As Mira went out, Peabody came in.
The Delanos are here.
On my way.
I got one of the other
potentials. She bitched and moaned, but she's coming in. Keep at it, Eve told her, and made her way to interview A.
The Delanos sat beside each other at the interview table, and both looked over at Eve as she came in with nearly identical expressions of anxiety.
"Has someone been killed?" Blaine asked.
"No."
"Thank God. Detective Peabody said no, but..."
"We worked ourselves up," Audrey admitted. "Convinced ourselves you wanted to tell us in person."
"I appreciate you coming in. I did want to talk to you in person, but about some specific correspondence."
Eve sat with the file she'd brought in. A.E. Strongbow. This time, she got nearly identical blank looks. "Neither of you recognized the name?" Blaine shook her head. "Sorry. Maybe this'll help." Eve pulled out the first letter, watched it click for Audrey almost immediately.
"I do remember. Of course. He sent a manuscript. After a couple of letters, he sent a manuscript. We have a post office box, as some people like to write letters rather than emails. He sent his book. Not merely a disc copy or download, which is more usual, but an actual physical copy of the manuscript. It happens, rarely,
And when it does, I send them back unopened with a letter explaining Blaine can't read it. And I try to offer a lot of encouragement, maybe some advice on how to find an agent or publisher. Audrey nudged the letter away. I remember this because when he wrote After Sudden Dark came out, he was furious and accused Blaine of plagiarizing his manuscript. Oh, for... Blaine stopped, held up a hand. Wait. I remember that. You told me about that. I didn't remember the name. I probably didn't mention his name. It was an ugly letter, and ridiculous on top of it. Not only didn't Blaine see the manuscript, which I sent straight back, unopened, but she'd already written Sudden Dark before he sent his stupid book. Without asking, I'll add. Damn it. We got the ARCs, the advanced reader copies, at the end of May, just days after he sent the manuscript. It was so insulting, I nearly... It's all right, Mom. Blaine reached over, rubbed her mother's arm. When she told me, I let my editors know, just in case. But as far as I know, that was the end of it. Do you think he's involved in this? She, Eve corrected. And I think she's killed two people. Oh, my God. I didn't handle it right. I didn't follow through the right way, Audrey began. You handled it right, Eve told her. This has nothing to do with you. This woman is delusional, psychotic. She contacted you again. No. Firmly, Audrey shook her head. I would have flagged any more correspondence from that name. Twice more I found. Different names. Harsh letters. Eve took them out. Accusatory. You get that sometimes, Blaine murmured as she picked up a copy, read it. You take the good with the bad. Are you sure these are from the same person? I'm confident. I believe this woman relocated from Delaware to Brooklyn. Brooklyn? Blaine went sheet white. My girls. Local police have an eye. And they're not in this. They're not in the books. Are there any coordinating characters with them in the series? No. I don't understand. If she's this angry with me, what better way to strike at me than through my girls? She's angry with you, but you've blended, at least in part, with the character of Dark. That's just crazy. Dark is 15 years younger than I am, in better shape and a lot better looking. She said it with a half smile, but her eyes stayed full of fear. She's never been married, has no children, eats fast food and drinks scotch when she can get it. Her relationship with her mother is strained at best, and for good reason, as Maggie Dark's a user of people. She likes loud music and bars, breaks rules as much for the fun of it as expediency. Eve listened to the rundown until Blaine stopped herself. Sorry. None of that matters. Actually, it applies. You talk about her like she's an actual person. She has to be real for me. I have to be invested in her, attached. I have to know her. She's fictional, of course, but she exists inside my head. She's real for Strongbow, and she's lost or is at least losing her grip on the fictional part. You created Dark. She's inside you. You represent her, or she you. Strongbow's rewriting your books so the killer wins, because she's the killer, and it's her story now. That was her thing, I remember. Audrey gripped her daughter's hand. The killer's book, with the killer as the main character, as the protagonist. She's connected her book with my Dark series. She's what? Showing me she's a better writer? That's part of it, and it may be the foundation. We've got angles on her now, and we're pursuing them all. Delano lifted a hand to her heart, rubbed lightly. You think she lives in Brooklyn? Not in your neighborhood. I don't think she could afford it. Do you have any tailoring done? Any sewing?
Not really. We've all had things altered in the shop we use for the less casual wear.
Do you know the seamstress?
Gia? Yes, for years.